Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, good morning. Grace is just laughing at me because I've lost the plot.
You were like, went to get your coffee and you were like, oh no, oh no.
I just thought you couldn't hear me because I didn't have my headphones on. Big old microphone. But yeah, I just talk nonstop to myself. But the dog is the excuse because I was just saying off air, as Grace knows, any person with animals talks to their animals, but I will like have full blown conversations with the cat. And now that there's a dog that's so much more interactive, I'm just chatting away. It's like, it's a bit Chilbo Baggins this morning, Volley, isn't it?
Chilbo Baggins is so funny.
I know.
Did you make that up?
No, I stole it off my friend here who like literally speaks like that constantly. Like everything she says is some kind of weird made up sentence, and then she sent that in a group chat over the weekend. I haven't stopped laughing about it.
You've also got some stars on your face. A star is born.
Yeah, have you heard of this star face?
I have actually. It's I used to really like, not that I don't anymore, but I was once quite obsessed with that girl who founded it, Julie.
I know nothing about the brand or who founded it or anything, but everybody wears these pimple patches now around LA.
Like out and about.
Mm-hmm.
She's out a genius. She was the digital beauty editor for LUS. And she left suddenly and then launched this brand. And she basically saw the pimple patches from Korea becoming a thing and said someone needs to make ones that are cute that people will actually just wear out and not be embarrassed to wear. And then she invented it. Like, it's
yeah,
crazy.
Yeah, I've come so late to this. I'm like such a boomer. I literally the other day was like, someone needs to write a piece on Starface because I just couldn't believe that. I was just seeing them everywhere for the past few weeks. Devin Lee Carlson is their like new star of their new campaign, obviously. And at first I was like, it's cute that girls are wearing them. It was sort of like, you know, the girl at the reception at my cute Pilates studio in West Hollywood kind of thing, or like Gen Z girlies. And I was like, it's just not, I was like, that's cute for them, but I just wouldn't wear them out. And then I went to Meow, that like thotty cute New York brand, launched doing like a pop-up in LA, and they were giving away Starface there, and they were giving away these black ones. And I really like the black ones.
They're very cute.
Above any of the, I don't like the ones that are kind of nude colored, where it looks like it's trying to, which I think is what other pimple patches were doing, where mm-hmm. you buy pimple patches. I had some from Sephora, because I really need them, because I love to pick literally anything I can. And as like an aside, I feel like this is going to be a crazy episode already.
Same.
The energy levels are high. As an aside, in the ADD podcast I listened to, he said that ADD people focus better when they're fidgeting. So like when I'm like picking my face as we do the podcast, it's because I'm concentrating and focusing.
Do they help having them there?
You need that. It helps my skin.
A fidget spinner on your face.
Yeah. I need, he was saying, we should get like a, you should get a stress ball or just something to play with while you talk. And that now classrooms are kind of implementing letting kids walk around as they listen, because a lot of ADD kids take it in better if they're during movement. Like when I run, I'm like more likely to take something in. That's why I always remember shit from podcasts I listen to when I run.
Yeah, that's interesting. That I can see that being very chaotic in a classroom, but I also remember when I was studying for my like HSC year 12 exams, I would walk, I would pace the house reading.
Yeah.
There was something I'd read that you retain information for like a test or something way more if you teach it to someone else. So I would walk around the house pretending to teach the stuff I needed to remember to like an imaginary audience. And I would walk and walk and walk. And I just think that, I think that helped me.
Speaking of, just very briefly, speaking of running,
yes.
I ran my first half marathon on Sunday.
Oh my God, you did it. Why didn't you tell us last week?
Because it was on Sunday.
I know, but that's so exciting.
Oh, like that I was gonna do it. Well, because basically it's quite funny. So the LA marathon was on my, it's always on my birthday or the day before my birthday. And that's like a big marathon where they shut down the streets and like it's this whole thing and everything. And then this one was just like a random, they just put on random halves and like 10K races and whatever all the time around LA. So basically this was just like along Santa Monica Beach, and it was the most like ragtag thing ever. They'd just drawn with chalk on the sand, like finish. And I don't know, I kind of assumed it was going to be a bit more of a big deal too, even though I knew it wasn't a big race. But we got there and like our friend, basically I was doing it with Nesta, and our friend Joz was going to do some of it, but she wasn't going to do the whole thing. And I kind of like didn't train properly at all, because I'm useless. And Nesta was like taking it really seriously and training properly. It was her first ever race. And I was like, oh, I want to run it. I just want to run it with her. So I was like, I'll just go and like see how I go. But if she's like way too fast for me, I'll slow down or just stop or whatever. It's just quite like whatever about it. And then we got there and I was expecting it to be like hard to find a park. And there was probably like, honestly, like 30 people doing it. But it was really cute. And we did, Joz did like the first 8 miles with us, which I can't remember what that is in kilometers now. Maybe like 15K or 14K or something. And then we, ran the whole thing, 21 kilometers.
That is my amazing. Longest. That's literally amazing. Running
my
21
longest
kilometers.
Run ever. She was also set. Joz was also saying, because she's like a runner from high school, done all these races, was in like a running group and stuff. She was saying that basically what we did was essentially just like a normal long run, because it wasn't a proper race. And she was like, if you did a proper race, you'd be able to get such a better time. Like, it's crazy that you guys got such a good time just basically running along the beach with like no one around you. And me and Nesta came third out of the, we came third out of the women.
That's amazing.
But there was probably like 10 women.
No, but it doesn't matter. That's like an incredible achievement. And it's actually probably a nice way to do your first one, because it takes the, I don't know, the anxiety around like a big race with lots of runners and lots of people watching. It takes it out of it. Now you've done it.
Yes.
You know you can do it. And then when you go do the proper like crazy bazillion people one, you'll be an old hand.
Exactly, because I like wanted, I hadn't properly been working out times or whatever. Nesta kind of had, like, she knew what she wanted to, she knew what she wanted to pace each mile to get the, to get, she wanted to go under 2:10, and we did 2:05, I think. But I wanted to get under, like, I know that a good half marathon is like under 2 hours, but then Joz was just like, if you were running that with a huge crowd of people in a proper race, you definitely would have, because of the adrenaline. So that's exciting.
Do you listen to something?
I was so unprepared. I basically did everything you shouldn't do, except I did fuel. Ali Izzo like DM'd me after the last one, where I was like, I didn't eat anything and went on a 20K run. I had like a nutritionist DM me as well, who I still need to reply to. But I got like quite drunk the day before, because it was my friend's baby shower, and we went on like a party bus and was drinking Moe and vaping. Like, that's how drunk I was. Like, allegedly I was saying the vape was going to make me go faster because of the smoke. And I was like drinking the all the carbs from the champagne. So what not to do. And then I also woke up that morning, forgot my Apple Watch, didn't charge my headphones. So one of my headphones wasn't working in my ear, but and didn't have like a running playlist or anything. But I was just putting on random. I was running with my phone and like changing songs as I went. Yeah, went across genres, went across the world, listened to Nijin Mystic, which was my favorite band when I was like 13. These Islander boys from New Zealand, and listened to them at the start because it's like really kind of slow, and then listened to them at the end because it was like making me feel all nostalgic and happy.
Nice.
Listened to Renaissance, listened to Ice Spice, Nicki Minaj, Charlie XCX, obviously.
I'm proud of you. That's a very amazing achievement.
Hook me up with your brother.
And Aiden. You guys can do that running app when at the wedding. Strava. Talk about it, yeah.
Uh-huh.
I think there's a few runners.
Will be me and Ellie have been texting about going for runs in France.
That's really cute.
Yeah. We'll do a little pre-wedding run.
I won't be there.
No, you definitely won't be there.
I can't imagine running for 2 hours, but I admire it. And I do feel like there is a sliding doors alternate version of me that exists that maybe doesn't run marathons, but like does, you know, runs, but I'm not.
Well, I never thought I was going to run. There was never any bone in my body that wanted to run a half marathon. This was my first ever race ever, which is so funny. First time I've ever put a bib on, and I've been running like 3 times a week for 4 years, kind of almost. No, I'm lying. It was like for 2021. But yeah, it was more like these girls that got me into it, because Joz was just saying like it's really good to have something that you are working toward. And I was like, I want to rebel when I have that. I like stopped running, but
yeah,
it's really fun to know you can do it. And it kind of, it's just like a nice, I think it's a really nice relationship to have to your body, because it's not about, like with running, when you're doing it properly, now that I am, is it's about like fueling your body, giving your body the carbohydrates it needs, like really eating a lot, like stretching a lot, otherwise you're going to get injured. And it's quite like nurturing and kind, and seeing how your body, how far your body can go when you like treat it right, is really nice.
Yeah, it's also something to do, like, which we'll get to later, but just the amount of things you can do with your friends now in our technology yes. world are limited. Like having a literal physical activity that a group of you can go and do together, it sounds crazy, but we'll talk about these articles briefly.
Yeah, it's been really, really nice, because like it also just means you see your friend, you see these specific friends who run more, because you know that you're all going on a run like 2 or 3 times during the week, and then you just try and tee it up so that you run together. So like every single weekend I'll go for like an hour-long run with a friend, and we chat the whole time.
Wow.
So nice.
Yeah, because you're meant to run. Okay, this is the last thing I'm going to say about running, but you're meant to run at a...
Lots of runners will be into this. It's so nice hearing, because people listen to our podcast while they run.
Yay. Okay. Well, that's very meta. Hello.
Run, girlies.
You're meant to run at a pace where you can have a conversation. I didn't realize that till recently, when you're like mm-hmm. training for thing. You're not meant to be sprinting till you're so puffed. You're meant to be going at a slow and
that's my whole thing with pace. Running. I go slow and steady, because once I still have this, well, I did for ages, I probably don't now that I know I can do that, but for ages I just had this thing where if I start getting puffed doing it, I feel like I can't do it. I have like quite a I just give up very easily when I feel like I can't do something. I love being like the best at something, and if I'm not, I want to quit. And so with running, the way to get my head around knowing I could do it was doing it very slow. And then, yeah, you can chat while you do it, which makes it fun. And anytime I speed up, I just slow myself down. That's kind of why I have an Apple Watch, is to like make myself slower more than anything, or to like not psych myself out in my head, because I'll look at this pace and be like, oh no, you can do this. But I just forgot it that day, and it was actually really nice to have those guys pacing us. Have you seen Nyad?
I still haven't seen it. I'm desperate to watch it. I know. I haven't. It's not on at the movies here, and I just have this aversion to watching movies at home at the moment. I don't know what it is. I need to get past it.
Yeah, I mean, I watched it literally on my laptop.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cursed.
I'm very keen to. Okay, Kate Middleton.
Well, that was a shock.
A shock.
A sad shock.
That was, so I was actually rock climbing with Zach, if you can believe, on Friday night. I was back at the gym. You've been there. We went to the rock climbing gym a million moons ago, and Izzy was really, really good, as I thought you would be, but you were even better than I expected. And I got confident from doing it with you, because you know how to talk to me. Like, I don't know, like a girl, basically. Yeah. Whereas Zach is like, just climb it. And I'm like, I'm scared. Mm-hmm. And he's like, just climb it. Like, I don't know how else to say it. Like,
but, and I was like, put your little perfect little hand over here and lift this leg and it's all going to be fine.
But we're doing that. I left my phone at home and then we had dinner. And by dinner, I mean Nando's. And then we came home and then we picked up our phones and Zach saw it before I did, the news.
Yeah, Amar told me as well.
Crazy, crazy news.
Amar told me, we were talking on the phone, and then he goes, apparently Kate Middleton has cancer. And I was like, who's saying this? Like, don't just throw talk that about shit then. You're seeing on Twitter. I was like, who's saying this? And he was like, no, apparently it's real. And I was like, who? And he was just like, the BBC, and then I hung up.
Have to go. Okay, so first response, guilt.
Sadness, guilt.
Yeah, sadness and guilt. Guilt, yeah, sadness that led to guilt and then guilt compounded by sadness. Personal guilt and guilt of our whole society for being so gross. There's two separate things going on. Yeah, but the first one is just mea culpa, feeling complicit in something gross, and that we all just like lost our minds in this way that should be studied. Like, we were all acting fucking insane.
Yeah, we were. But it was a fucking weird situation.
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
Like, it was just
That's the second.
I think that it took the majority of us a very long time to start acting crazy. I think the people who started those crazy Reddit threads and were like digging through everything with her being gone a month when they did say she was getting a surgery is a bit like, feels a bit soon. It took us like 3 months to even get clued onto what was going on with the majority of those like weird conspiracy theories. And then when that did happen, the reason we carried on talking was because then the fucking palace did all that weird shit that made everyone be like, oh, maybe there is something to these conspiracy theories.
Yeah, so this was the thing where everyone started like finger pointing, and I haven't seen so much of this personally as I've seen think pieces about it and people talking about it, but this pylons on media organizations and telling people they should be ashamed of themselves and blah, 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 blah. The reason that, exactly like you said, you and I even did, we just did a Patreon episode about it where we were like quite silly and going into the conspiracy theories, but none of that was discussed really by us or by any mainstream media outlet until the photo agency thing happened. And that's such a major, major news, indisputable major news story. Picture of royal family is killed for the sixth time in history by the biggest photo agency in the world because it's been doctored at the same time that there are conspiracies around her location. That's just a real news story. What's weird in retrospect is just how everyone in the world was so captivated by it at the same time and in the weeds of these conspiracy theories and constantly talking about it, and how it gripped us so intensely when there was like a pretty logical explanation.
There. She was sick.
Yeah. Like she'd said, I'm sick, please leave me alone. And it was more likely realistically that there was just a Photoshop fuck up than that they'd put a fake woman into the photo or that she was completely missed. You know, it's, we all just got very, very sucked into the fun of the conspiracy and the fact that we were all able to talk about it out loud. And I'm kind of interested by that. Yeah, but
that's fucking, that's just their fucking fault. It's like, just, I get that she didn't want to tell the truth and she shouldn't be forced to tell the truth before she's ready when she's trying to process something very private and very serious with her family. Like, I completely get that. But the way the palace handled it is the biggest fuck up ever. Like, this just would never have gotten so out of hand to the point where, like, Kim Kardashian... Wait, I wonder if she's changed the caption of her thing. She was, like, on my way to find Kate on her Instagram. Like, to the point of that. Like, that's on them. And them fucking blaming her for the photoshopping. Blaming a sick woman for... I know. Photoshopping those photos. That's, like, actually insane. No, she hasn't changed it.
Someone goes, I think an apology is needed, exclamation mark.
Kim. Oh my God, yeah. 10K people like it.
How
you should probably take this down now.
It's just not, yeah, I think.
You owe our princess a apology. Respectfully, never come to the UK again. I love it when people say respectfully like that.
Our princess. It's like there's a lot of, like, finger wagging and moral high grounding that I think is kind of silly, because I think the tenor of so much of the conversation was so silly and just, like, a fun thing to discuss because it was so bizarre and so unheard of and so strange.
Well, it just felt like a movie.
Yeah.
It's like the fucking princess is missing.
Yeah.
And, like, there's, you know, it just felt... It felt like there, it's obviously now that you look back, we knew there was something going on, but I just genuinely thought it was her getting a divorce.
Same.
Other, like, you know, like if I believed she was in a coma or believed she was really sick, would never have spoken. Poor Rose Hanbury.
I know, Rose Hanbury's officially had enough. She's put a letter out. a cease and desist. To Stephen Colbert and to the Sunday Times. Like, don't even know what to make of that. That's the thing. All these separate things all came together because I think it's an interesting assessment of, like, the line between mainstream media and news and Twitter online conspiracy theories, because the line between those two is so thin. And it just got stepped completely over in this news story. So usually they don't have the right to, like, Rose Hanbury kind of never had the right to come out and say she didn't have an affair with William, because it was all being said by people on Reddit and, like, Dumois. And, you know, there was obviously some articles about it, but no one came out and said it. And yet these things are being circulated and people are taking them as basically being fact. and then creating these narratives around it, and they're kind of just fantasy, like, fan fiction narratives, some of the stuff, like us saying we want her to, like, that was us, we were being funny, but just saying our fan fiction is that she goes and, like, gets divorced and goes on Jeff Bezos's yacht barefoot and this, like, photograph of
that is still my dream for her.
But it's not, we're not treating her, like, it's all just being treated like a bit of fun. You know what I mean? It's not intended to, like, ruin her life or be heard by her or be discussed by her. But then this case shows that when you're doing that and treating celebrities like they're just kind of characters in a play or in a movie, that there's a real person in the middle of it who's...
My girl on The Bachelor just said this.
Did she? There's some real people at stake.
Yeah, which is true.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Even like one of my friends was saying this yesterday, I'm so fucking proud of her. My friend Bambi, who's this incredible producer, her album won Best Electronic Album of the Year at the Juno Awards, which is like the Canada's version of the Grammys.
Amazing.
And it's like the first time she's ever won an award because she's been like quite underground before this. And basically she wore this on the first day, second day she wore this see-through Capernaum dress on the red carpet and had her tits out and just, she was like, she literally was like, I didn't even think to wear a bra, like it's fashion, why the fuck would I? And then she said that she was just on the red carpet, whatever, having fun. Then that night she met Nelly Furtado.
Love.
Nelly Furtado comes over to her, gives her a hug and goes, you look gorgeous, don't worry about what anyone's saying. And she was like, what? And then Nelly Furtado's daughter said the same thing. Like, hugged her and was like, you're amazing. Like, just ignore all the haters. She was like, what the fuck? So then she goes online, finds... She did an interview with some, like, news... whatever. Presenter. And because she was holding the mic, like, all these fucking trolls on the internet thought she was the news presenter. And everyone was going crazy, being like, you're a disgrace, you're a slut, like, la, 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 like, being so crazy, people being racist. Her mum got in and was, like, trying to defend her. And then people, like, found a photo of her mum and were, like, putting it on the internet and stuff. Like, it was so crazy. And she was just like, I know... that, and this is on such a minuscule scale compared to Kate Middleton, but she was just like, I know that everyone on the internet is crazy and that it shouldn't get to me and that they're just random trolls, but it literally still made an impact.
Mm.
And I was like, it just does. It's people fucking talking about you. Like, even if you know what they're saying is untrue.
Exactly. There's something and this actually feeds into the like the articles that we wanted to talk about to do with phones and the internet. There's something so like dark and sinister about the internet as a whole, and about basically Jonathan Haidt has just written this book. Oh my God, what's it called? I can't find it. But he wrote a piece for the Atlantic about what the book is about, which is called End the Phone Based Childhood Now. And he basically argues that like, we, in 2012 specifically, as a society, moved into the physical space of the internet. Like, we literally retreated from the outside world and started spending between 4 and 10 hours a day in this physical space, which is the online world, and no one ever agreed to it or signed up to it, and no one really even understands the fact that we're in there. And that's what's happened with this Kate Middleton thing, is that we're in this virtual universe all yelling and saying these crazy fucking things about this woman, and then there's our actual touching grass real life where there's just a woman in a little cottage with her family being like, what is going on? And we haven't been able to unpack that disconnect yet.
People also find talking about what technology is doing to us boring. And on the one hand, and on the other hand, just like don't like talking about it because they don't want it to be true, I think, in a way. Like, everyone doesn't like it being pointed to phones and will make up, like, any other excuse for it to be something else. So I sent you this piece last week, not even thinking we were going to talk about it, just because I thought you'd find it interesting. But I saw it on Substack, and it's called It's Obviously the Phones. And it's by this woman, Magdalene Taylor, who wrote a piece for the New York Times about how Americans are having less sex. How fewer Americans are having sex across nearly every demographic. And basically being like, all of the data highlighted that previous generations in the same circumstances across any kind of different caveat, like wealth, age, orientation, were having more sex than we are today. And she was just kind of emphasizing the role that sex plays in our cultural well-being and like its connection to the loneliness epidemic. But she didn't really have an answer as to what it was. And basically she's just been like, there isn't one universal answer, but essentially she's saying that there's, you know, economic despair, political unrest, climate fears were among the reasons that she'd heard cited. But she said, honestly, that all feels pointlessly abstract. It puts the problem entirely out of our hands when I believe it may, in fact, quite literally be in them. It's obviously our phones.
This is exactly that piece. And then this Jonathan Haidt piece, and I've listened to a couple of interviews with him as well, that the statistics are staggering. Like, so the argument is that 2012 is when phones basically went from the iPhone 4, I think, was the first iPhone to have a front-facing camera and the ability to download apps. So before that, it was literally just like the same as a flip phone, but it also had like a torch
and snake
and better images. And then with the front-facing camera introduced selfies, and the downloading of apps was the same time that apps like Instagram and Twitter and Facebook introduced likes and retweets. So basically like a tangible like response system on content. So this is just the start of the Atlantic thing. He says, something went horribly wrong for adolescents in the early 2010s. Rates of depression and anxiety in the United States rose by more than 50% from 2010 to 2019. The suicide rate rose 48% for adolescents aged 10 to 19. And for girls aged 10 to 14, it rose 131%. The problem was not limited to the US. It's happened in Canada, the UK, Australia, New Zealand. Gen Z, people born in and after 1996, are suffering from anxiety, depression, self-harm and related disorders at higher levels than any other generation for which we have data available. Loneliness and friendlessness has surged since 2012. Reading and math rates have gone down since 2012 across all countries. There's declines in like dating, sex, increase in people living at home, declines in the amount of people who are creating new businesses. Like the impact it's had is so, so major.
I also like this study that she puts in the Substack piece basically saying, which says in February, The Atlantic published a feature about the decline of hanging out. So it basically says, the percentage of teens who report hanging out with friends two or more times per week since 1976 was steady at around 80% until the mid-90s, when a subtle decrease began to occur. Then in 2008, 1 year after the release of the first iPhone, the decrease became much more dramatic. It's continually fallen sharply since, hovering now at just under 60% of teens who spend ample times with friends each week. And it's like, I think that kind of just is such a key thing to all of this. It's like why there's a decline in sex, which isn't, sex is about connection and, you know, whatever. And hanging out with people, I was literally talking about this with Bambi again on the phone yesterday, because I was saying what we do, or what I'm so guilty of doing, is like talking to people online and thinking that's a connection and thinking that that's an interaction, and then you don't actually spend quality time, you don't leave the house, you don't like properly catch up with people. I barely talk to people on the phone anymore because I'll just text them back and forth, or even like I know voice noting is a little different because you're actually like speaking with someone, but just me and Tat live 20 minute drive from each other. We never see each other in LA. We literally see each other maybe once every 2 weeks, and we'll talk on the phone or text every day and think that that's the same value as hanging out. And then last week we went to, there was like an event, a fashion event that I was gonna bail on, because that's the thing, it just self-perpetuates. Like if you've been at home, you don't want to leave home, you can't be bothered getting ready to go out, like you start getting weird social anxiety that you didn't have before. I was gonna bail, end up going, we have a few drinks, we chat to people, and I meet new people, and then we like crashed a Vivian Westwood party, and I was like, oh my God, it's been so long since I've done something like this and just had a silly night out with friends. And it feels so much different to just chatting on the phone or texting. And it's still socially, it's weird because Bambi was saying it still kind of is a form of hanging out when you're on your phones because you feel socially exhausted from it at the same time. Mm-hmm. Like you can feel really zapped from it and like exhausted after people contacting you constantly and notifications going off all the time, like you always say. But I feel like you're not getting the same positive associations you would when you like actually spend time with people.
Exactly. I think there's so many separate things at play with that are all separate trends that we've been talking about. And I feel like it's the first time my brain is putting the pieces together. One being, I think a huge amount of social anxiety post-COVID and feeling, exhausted by the effort it feels like it requires to go out and socialize, even though it's something that's so necessary to your mental health. I think there's genuinely a thing now where I feel a lot of like, what do you do? I think a lot of us are drinking. We're so aware, so hyper aware of everything now, of ourselves, of our friends, of our behaviors, what it's called, how we're feeling, where we are in our cycle, where our hormones are, like what our emotions are called. So we're very, very, we're kind of exhausted by ourselves. We're like hyper aware of, I don't like to drink because it makes me feel depressed the next day. So I don't want to drink. I don't like to, whatever. You don't want to go out to dinner a lot because it's a cost of living crisis and you can't just go out and be eating with your friends all the time. You take out drinking and spending a lot of money eating out. The list of things that are available to do with your friends suddenly reduce.
She was also saying in this piece there's a decline in third spaces, like few places for teenagers to hang out outside of the home. Skate parks are being turned into pickleball courts with no loitering signs. Malls are shuttering. Like we used, and you can no longer spend a dollar on a McChicken to justify hanging out at McDonald's for ages. I think at our age it's a particularly hard one because I'm thinking about my sister and a lot of what they do still is, I think, just being broke, like incredibly broke in your early 20s is kind of like freeing in a way, because there's no, I think now at this stage in our lives there's people just on such different salaries or different schedules where it's like tomorrow I'm going out for dinner with friends and they might want to go somewhere really bougie because it's their only dinner out that week, and then it's like you're fucked for the rest of the week. Or they'll still just go to Dunkin' Donuts in like Westgate Mall in West Auckland and sit there for hours and hours and hours.
Yeah.
But we just wouldn't want to do that now. But there's a decline in spaces where you can.
This is something so interesting Jonathan Haidt wrote about as well, where there's this correlation between there was moral panic about kidnapping and abduction. I've heard him talk about this before in the 90s and early 2000s, where it felt like it was happening everywhere all the time, when really it was these outlier cases that were just huge in the media. And he said, statistically, if you left your child in an unlocked car, it would take 400 years for them to get abducted. Like, it's so rare. It just happens like 100 times. I don't know, I can't remember the statistic he said. But the likelihood of them getting depression, anxiety, disordered eating, chronic loneliness, never having sex, like that is almost certain if they go on technology. And yet no one will let their kids run around on the street by themselves or walk from A to B or like walk up to Johnny down the road's house just to hang out on the street because it's dangerous. And yet everyone lets their kids be on technology because there's this feeling of, well, I don't want my kid to be the weird kid that is the only one that doesn't have a TikTok account. But this idea that children need to be looked after 24/7 and their parents need to be having eyes on them 24/7 or they're not safe is like this huge myth. And it's why people are really lonely, because there's just not a culture of kids just out and about doing stuff. Don't you feel like you just never see kids around?
Yeah. And it used to be, actually Amar's mum was talking about this, like back in the 90s or whatever, and obviously beforehand, there was such a community mindset in neighborhoods where the kids would run after school and go and play outside, and then the mums would chat, and it was just like so much more community minded than a lot of places are now. I think it's
you trust, he says that, I can't remember what he calls it, but he says it's like adult solidarity. There used to be a thing of, if your kid like ran off down the road or something, you would just assume an another random adult on the street is probably normal and fine and will be like, where's your parents? Oh, they're around here. I'll help you. Like, you could trust other adults, whereas now we're so fearful of each other and think everyone is a freak. So we do the opposite, which is like that adds to kids' anxiety as well. I think the other thing I wanted to mention too on the topic of like friends and loneliness and phones is I feel like we've all become, and this article, that article you sent references it, just way too like hyper aware of and critical of the people in our lives' flaws and shortcomings. And I feel like this whole concept of like toxic friendships and needing to cut people out of your life and like spotting behaviors that you don't like and therefore distancing yourself, I genuinely think that's had an impact on this as well. I think people are distancing themselves from people that are just behaving like just displaying basic human flaws and convincing themselves because they've watched a bunch of TikToks that they're like benign narcissists or whatever.
We've all become very impatient with each other.
Yes.
And I think it's to do with being constantly on our phones. Like, the thing with being constantly on our phones, I think that's massive for me, is always feeling like there's something happening, never feeling like there's much downtime, which then makes you feel way more impatient and act way more impatient around other people. And it's my own fault. I'll like initiate all these conversations when I'm feeling jolly on like Instagram. Like, if I look at my fucking Instagram, the amount of like conversations I'll have in a day, it's just insane. It's so stupid and it's about fucking nothing. And then and then I feel like there's constantly things going on constantly. It's that thing of like, I know this is so obvious, but that thing of just news being there all the time. And so it feels like there's a never ending amount of things to catch up on always. Like even I'll go on Substack now and save, or like on Pocket and save a bazillion different articles that I need to read at some point. The New Yorker gets delivered. I'm like, who has time to read that every single week? My phone's going off with like X, Y, and Z. You've got deadlines for work. You need to reply to X. Like, it's just, and then so then you're impatient with people in real life as well. And you just don't have much care or, yeah, for your friends. I don't know.
Yeah, I woke up yesterday and I don't even look at the news intentionally. I just like check something on my phone and I scroll, whatever. The news app just showed up on my phone. And the first two stories was bridge collapses in Baltimore, killing blah, blah, blah. And it was like a picture of this sunken bridge that got hit by a fucking ship. And then a child got sucked into the like cleaning pipe in a pool at the Hilton and died.
Oh
like
my God.
A full child, like a 6-year-old child. And I was like, I shouldn't know this. Like, I shouldn't know about disasters. Horrifying, horrendous, horrific disasters happening on the other side of the world. I shouldn't just be getting that against my will.
No.
I should be choosing to open a newspaper, and even then, I shouldn't see that. Like, why is that being forced on me against my will in the morning?
And also against, like, not against your will, but just without, I think why Instagram is such a minefield is because it's made up of fucking everything. And it's like, sometimes I'll be in bed and I know I shouldn't scroll before bed because last night I was finding it so impossible to go to sleep. And I was like, it's your own fucking fault. But even on Instagram, it's like you'll accidentally swipe and then you'll just see something that just makes you feel like shit, whether it's an old colleague doing something, or like someone you knew from high school getting some milestone achievement, and then you just feel crap, and then you swipe again and it's like something about Gaza, and then it's like you swipe again and it's like none of it really makes you feel good. And I think the reason we stay on it is because of this thing where we think we're connecting with other people, when it's like these studies are now showing that it's like doing the opposite. It's just making us believe we're connecting and we're having connection when that's not how it actually feels to us on the inside. And that's why we're getting all lonely and fucked up.
Exactly. And then it's like, to go back to the Kate Middleton thing, if that was 20 years ago or a world in which social media didn't exist, you have Princess Kate says that she's had abdominal surgery and she's sick and no one will see her until Easter. that would be it. Even if there was some people chatter, like some weird, there's always weirdos. There's always going to be a weirdo that's like sitting at home saying, no, I think this and the blah, 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 and the timing and the whatever, putting the dots together. That would just not, everyone just would have got on with their lives, not thought about it more than once, not discussed it. And even if there was then a Photoshop scandal, that would be big news and it would be on the front of a newspaper and everyone would be talking about it. But we wouldn't have this ability to interact with what every single person on planet Earth was talking about and thinking about it at the same time. So it wouldn't occupy our brains that intensely for as long as it did and escalate in that way where people keep adding things to it to keep the conversation going. So there's an escalation. So you're checking back in, then like 2 or 3 days later, you're refreshing Reddit or Twitter. That just, it would just die off. People would just lose interest. And I think we have versions of that taking up brain space all the time. Weird internet beefs, like what a random influencer, if they're married or not, like just weird things that we just have ticking away in our head is just happening because of the internet. And I think it's part of what's making us all feel so exhausted.
Yeah, it's exactly, I mean, Kate is a celebrity, but it's like that celebrity culture thing where you get, you care about what these random fucking people are doing or saying. And then, yeah, you're like spending your time, I don't know, learning about the most insane stuff when you take a second to think about it. Like on Dumois, I'm like, the whole point of that fucking account is so random if you take a second to think about it.
And I think what we've lost, the biggest thing I found when I had my like 2 second full phone detox last year was an appreciation for dead time and just a realization of how I optimize every single minute in my life to be consuming something. Like if I'm waiting for the kettle to boil, I'm looking at something on my phone. That's like 4 minutes, but that I don't just stare into the distance and let the kettle boil. If I'm before, which I really don't do anymore now, I would listen to a podcast in the shower or walking from doing sending stupid emails on my phone. I have to have like a reality TV show playing in the background. There's this constant shoving of stuff into my brain. And those dead minutes between like getting out of the shower, putting a towel on, doing a skincare, coming out, getting like those accumulate to free brain space where you can just kind of like breathe. And if we got all of that back, we would be such better human beings, I think. We'd all be less stressed, less anxious, less depressed. We'd have more time for the people.
Yeah, less tired, less burnt out, because you're not going to feel like you've just been listening to something and trying to learn while you're in the shower. That was like after I did that run, I was listening to music the whole time and then I got in the car and put music on and then I was like, oh my God, just have some silence and just think about the thing that you just did instead of playing more music.
Exactly. That thing that writer said in the Substack where she said some people are on their phone 10 hours a day. What is that taking time from? People didn't used to read 10 hours a day in the 1940s or whatever. Like that there's, we're taking that time away from other things that our brain needs to do.
Yeah. And people like our partners, our friends, we're all just probably just way shittier friends and partners than we ever have been before.
I think we are.
Cause we're all much busier, I think as well on a whole without even the phones.
Yes. And I say that like I feel so busy all the time. And then yesterday I just wrote down a list of every single horrible, boring admin thing that I had to do. Everything I was putting off, every email I hadn't answered, blah, 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 blah. And I thought it was going to take me 12 hours and it took me like 3. Mm. I was like, the actual time it takes to do things often is not that much. And it's like, well, I feel like we have all of this like noise and chatter that's distracting us all the time. So we feel like we've done a huge amount every day and really we haven't done that much.
Yeah. I often feel like so, so, so overwhelmed and then we'll bang it out in like 2 hours and then be like, oh. But I still never read. I'm fine. I still am like just not reading because I think that that's one of those things where it feels like such a leisurely activity that I don't, I either don't have, I think it's like when I have the brain capacity to read, because I was just thinking about it in comparison to like reality TV shows, which I will just have on, but I think it's because you're just completely zoned out of that. So it feels like no brain is being used. And then, yeah, with reading, I'm like, oh, I just don't have time for this, because if I'm going to be doing something with my brain, I need to be doing X, Y, and Z. I need to be thinking of the next story idea. I need to be focusing on like writing this. I need to be like optimizing, making myself, bettering myself. Like, it's all about that. It's all about optimizing and making yourself better, and like, so stressful. Nothing ever feels good enough, like ever. The minute I tick something off, I'm like, right, what's next?
I think that's a, like, and we'll have to wrap this up in a sec, but so we'll talk about Phoebe Philo piece on Patreon. But that was, it was an interview with Phoebe Philo that Vanessa Friedman did. It was the only interview she's done, first interview she's done in like 10 years. But the biggest takeaway that I had from that piece was just, I don't know if it's her as a person or her generation, and I think in many ways she has the luxury of this, but much like kind of Zadie Smith does, but she seems to just think about her life 5, 10, 15 years down the track. Like she just took breaks from her career for 3 or 4 years where she literally didn't do anything and then came back. And then when she came back, she took 2 years to launch something, and she's thinking about collections down the road. And I was just so inspired by not thinking about tomorrow or 2 weeks' time or a fortnight's time and making plans for what your life and career looks like that are just longer term. We're in such a like instant quick fix culture where I feel like my idea of success is always that thing of like, what's next? What can I do tomorrow? What can I do that's like quick.
Yeah.
And it's crazy,
which is so stupid and like doesn't make for good work.
Yeah.
Amar's always said that to me. He's just like, stop focusing on like writing a piece for like a digital site that you've written for before, because who cares? Just stop and just do something behind the scenes and work on a project quietly and for a long time. And I'm like, I don't want to.
That's like really fucking hard in this day and age. Mm. We're like driven by this like constant
distractions as well.
It's exhausting. So Jonathan Haidt in this piece, he suggests 4 things that need to be done to like change the way that especially children, he's talking about kids specifically, but all of us relate to technology. He thinks no one should have social media till they're 16, and that social media accounts need to really strictly enforce that. I can't really see a downside to that, to be completely honest.
Mm.
No smartphones until you're in high school at all. So
yeah, but it's so funny because for us, that's like, I'm just like, do people have smartphones before high school?
Apparently. And phone-free schools, which again seems just fucking obvious, but yeah, like not just if you get caught, you're in trouble, like 0 phones at school whatsoever.
Yeah.
And then, because he's just said like kids' learning rates are just in the toilet. My brother's a teacher and he hasn't said that, but he's just said, you notice the attention span is just crazy with kids. And then I can't remember the last one. I think it was like, it was holding the tech companies accountable basically, because we do all of this talking about how we're not disciplined enough and we're useless and we're terrible and we're so bad and why don't we do better, when we're literally being given these devices that are designed by evil tech overlords to make us addicted to them and to rob our attention.
Yeah. I actually just wrote a piece about Substack and how it's kind of like, it was the piece itself was about how Substack is becoming this place where like people will go for fashion and shopping inspiration that's just not algorithm based, because it's kind of, you can like follow people whose style you really like, and then there's now group chat function where you can go in and chat with other people who also follow it, whatever. But another part, I was talking to this girl and she was saying basically like Substack, the reason it became so popular was because it was just like this haven where it's not really ad based. It's a subscription model, and brands haven't really entered it in this way. So it all feels quite authentic, and you're getting like actual interesting articles on there that aren't based on like clickbait and whatever. And then she said, but like recently Substack launched this notes feature, which basically is like, it's essentially a home feed like Twitter, where you I can't remember what they call it, but you like repost other writers' work and you like engage with them. And they were just saying like, with the launch of that, it's just becoming like every other social media app where you're rewarded for being on there. Your reward, because you get more followers, you get restacking, I think they call it. You get more followers, you get more likes, you get more visibility if you're doing that social media side of it. And it's just like, it's just at the end of the day, it's a tech company that wants to make money, that wants you to be on there.
Yeah,
like none of them are safe.
None of them are safe.
Exactly. And then now all these writers who were spending so much of their time crafting these like really original, thought-provoking, long-form essays on Substack are now getting more rewarded if they're instead like resharing other shit on notes.
It's so frustrating. I do think the good thing about all this is like Substack is a sign of the fact that people hate this shit. Like, I think everyone hates it. I don't think anyone actually likes it or wants it to be like this. And I think as soon as alternatives actually come up, we'll move away from this stuff because it's bad. It's bad.
It is. And I just want to touch my phone. I've got all these notifications.
Oh my god.
Do you know what gets me all the fucking time? Like, why does my photos app just go 3 years ago today? Look back at 27th of March 2021. And I'm like, okay. And suddenly I'm looking back at this little memory and I think I was in Margate. And then I just want to like send it to whoever, you know? Like,
yeah. Well, they're so good. They have the smartest people in the world working on this shit to figure out how to get your brain just on this stuff. It's so sinister.
It's on my phone now. La 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 la. Sometimes I just want to be smooth brained, but I know it's bad for me.
I've gotten really good at being off my phone in the sense that a lot of the time my phone, as you know, is off in a bedroom in a drawer. But it's like on desktop, you can still look on Instagram and go on YouTube and be on WhatsApp and get distracted by shit on the internet. So it's like, it's not even as simple as that, sadly.
It's been quite interesting realizing that for myself, it is largely communicating with people because I'm such like a fucking social butterfly. But I feel like here I've been in my house so much more and just communicating with people online and thinking that's the same thing, and reading that piece and realizing that it's really not, and that I have to make an effort to go out into the world is really interesting. And just stop having these conversations online and just being like, when are we next hanging out?
Yes. And like treating it like exercise or whatever, like getting enough sleep. Like you literally need it for your health as a human being to spend face-to-face time.
I drove to Tat's house last week and I texted her being like, I feel you have to be nice to me because I'm feeling so depressed. And it was because I like hadn't left the house in so long. That's why I was feeling depressed.
Yeah, that's it. It's like that creates, it's all self-fulfilling.
Yeah.
But I do think it's fixable. All of these things are like a muscle. You do it, you learn by doing. Like, we just have to do it and then you get better at doing it and it feels like less of a chore.
Yeah.
And we're dealing with the aftermath of like, no one wants to talk about it. I don't want to talk about it, but we all went through a lot with COVID. Like, we're all just learning to be humans again.
Agreed.
Agreed.
All right, girls.
Goodbye, goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.